This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the April Fool's edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, joined as always by at DRF Formulator Mike. And today we have a very special guest joining us from the nicer climes down in Florida, Gabby Gaudette. Gabby, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure. I've been wanting to do this for quite some time, and it's a perfect weekend to do it.
Well, yeah, welcome. You know, great to have you on.
You go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on. We've never met, so it's a pleasure talking to you. I've certainly watched your work both at Gulfstream and at Laurel Park. So excited. Certainly familiar with you. As a handicapper and as somebody who judges horses in the paddock, but why don't you give a little background for all of the listeners who may or may not be as familiar with you? How did you get started in racing? I know you're grown up in a family of horsemen, but tell a little bit about your background.
Well, I did grow up in a racing family. My parents have been trainers for a very, very long time. My dad actually started off as being a jockey way back when he was younger. And then he got into training throughout New England and then eventually relocated in Maryland. And my mom was kind of his right-hand woman throughout it all. And he retired back in 2012, actually. And my sister is now a trainer as well. And she's pretty much running the operation. I have aunts and uncles who were farriers, jockeys, you name it. I came up in a horse racing background, and I went throughout college, and I got this in mass communications, and I came up under the tutelage of Frank Ruley, who was the handicapper in Maryland, and he was kind of my mentor, and when he was deciding to retire, that's how I got the position, and it's pretty much in the history books since then.
Sometimes in this game, it seems like there's a bit of a divide between people who are interested in the horseman side of the equation and the handicapping side of the equation. It seems to me, from the beginning, you've understood plenty about handicapping, and it seems to me you've improved and gotten better and better as you've done the job. A couple of days I was watching Gulfstream this year, I saw you give out some pretty sizable pick fours and maybe even a pick six one day. I wanted to ask you about how you learned about the handicapping side of the equation and how you incorporate the two, your horseman background and the handicap.
Well, I think growing up in the industry, and I galloped horses throughout high school and even in college as well, and coming up under, you know, trainers, you get a different perspective. It's definitely important to know what you want to see in a horse, know all that goes on the back stretch to bring a horse over, because, and from a respect standpoint too, it's just that you like to see the whole picture. But on the handicapping side of things, I primarily learned from Frank Ferulli. And I mean, I knew how to read a racing form since I was very young, but it wasn't my main focus. My main focus was, you know, galloping horses, grooming them, helping my parents run certain horses in the afternoon. And Frank Ferulli taught me really what I know, and then obviously just kind of teaching myself and focusing on replays, and even Andy. I learned a lot from Andy Thurley throughout the past couple of months down here in software. So I think with this game, you always have to have an open mind and continue to learn throughout it all.
That's great. Andy and I worked together for many years at the Ciro seminars at Saratoga when Harvey Pack was hosting, and I always tell people, sitting on the side of that stage and just listening to the way he'd break down a horse's trip or analyze the presumed pace in a race was definitely one of the things that was sort of like my finishing school as a handicapper as well. How did you find the experience of working with him this winter?
I loved it because I think he's a person that you have to be well prepared in order to really hold your own on air with. And I appreciate that because I do a lot of work or watch a lot of replays. I take a lot of notes, and it's fun to be on air with someone who will give you a run for your money in a sense that you can have a in-depth conversation and you can have a difference in opinions and nobody gets offended. I think you can see, it gives the viewers the ability to see get multiple perspectives on a horse or on a race or even a dynamic. And I've learned a lot from him in terms of, betting strategies, paying attention to certain things. So it's been an absolute pleasure working with him.
That's terrific. I want to talk to you more about the trip handicapping aspects of things. Coming at it from a horse, from a horseman background, are you looking for different things, or are you still pretty much looking for the things that traditional handicappers are looking for in terms of trouble, or are you more concerned about lead changes and other signs from the horses, perhaps, that they're doing well or not doing well?
I think both. I guess I'll give you a couple of examples. Like, I'll see maybe a horse that finds a little bit of, say he steadies in the middle part of the stretch, and he's kind of a smaller, more agile horse. I would put, and then in comparison to maybe a kind of a bigger horse, a squatting type of turf horse, say both of those horses get into a little bit of trouble in the mid part of the stretch, I would put more stock in the trouble of the bigger body type of horse, because obviously it takes them more time to recover, whereas the smaller, more agile horse, not essentially the case. So maybe that might be a little bit of a difference, but I also think you have to be cognizant of trips and not over-exaggerate them as well, because horses will get into trouble, and I think sometimes we use that kind of as a scapegoat as to why the horse didn't win. You have to proceed with trip handicapping, and I think keep an open mind and not over-exaggerate certain trips. I don't think I take a different perspective to it. I just think you just have to be attentive. But the funny thing is that Andy and I were talking about this, and it happened several times when he was down here and we were doing the morning show and analyzing a trip. And he took a different take on some trips than I did, and we had a difference in opinion. So even when you're analyzing trips, you can have differences in opinions, which I think is fascinating in a sense.
It's one of the reasons why I like trip handicapping so much. It's your own subjective view of a race. It can't be reduced to just a number in the form, and that's one of the fun things about Formulator on DRF. You can go in there and you can put your trip note in there, and it shows up right in the lines of the PPs. Do you use Formulator to make your trip notes, Gabby, or do you have another method that you use?
I do. I use Formulator for relatively everything. I have a couple of different programs that I use on top of that, but in terms of trip notes, physical notes, watching replays, I primarily use Formulator.
We may now be begging you. Mike is scribbling in his notes right now. Idea for webinar guest, Gabby Gaudet.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you if you're available, Gabby. One thing I was going to ask, as a handicapper who, I'm sure you have to handicap a few days out, as a handicapper that is making your assessments and developing your opinions, but also as someone with that horseman background that sees things in the paddock 15 minutes before the race, how much do you change your opinion based on what you see? That's question one. And then question two is, are there certain changes or things that you really want to focus on when you see a horse in the paddock, like an equipment change, for instance, a different kind of bit, that sort of thing?
Well, to answer the first question, there have been plenty of times where, and that's the battle with kind of doing the simulcast show and sending in picks prior to, the afternoon. You have to do it. But sometimes I completely change my opinion on a horse, especially in maiden special weights in the afternoon. Down here especially, you have tons of well-bred first-time starters in these maiden special weights. You have the Todd Fletchers, you have Chad Brown, Christoph Clement. And, I think it's very important to pay attention to a horse's physical behaviors of how they look in the flesh. And I sometimes, to answer your question, sometimes I will change my opinion, and I'll try to be as politically as correct as possible on air to try to give the public as much information as possible. And I'm not afraid to say, you know, I didn't use this horse, but he was absolutely fantastic in the paddock and kind of give a description. I really like to pay attention to not only if a horse is washed out or if the horse has good energy, bad energy, but also how they physically look as it pertains to the race conditions. So say a turf sprinter, a turf router, a dirt horse, all those different things. And that's where I think physical handicapping really comes into play. And my winter down here, it's funny because you really have to pay attention to certain trainers and how their horses look, because one good horse is different. One good looking horse is different from the other. Christophe Clément, his horses look, and they have a very particular look to them, especially his maiden, in their first start. Chad Brown, I think a lot of his maidens down here have been very telling in the paddock or on track side if they're going to run well at first casting or not, even Todd. So some of those, you know, physical handicapping really comes into play, especially in maiden special weights and in changes in horses. Say a horse, you know, is always washed out. A horse like Shackleford, I can remember, he was a nervous horse in the afternoon. He sweat a lot, you know, and he almost gave off a nervous energy, but that was him. He always did that every race. So if he showed up to the paddock too calm, that would actually be a negative, in my opinion, and a concern. So you want to look at differences in behavior, too.
All right, Gabby, we only have a few more minutes with you. I'm going to ask you a difficult question. Get ready to go into full-on politician mode to evade here. But have you had any moments where you've gotten in trouble with trainers about comments you've made about their horses on TV?
I have not, and that is the honest truth. I have never had an altercation with a trainer about talking about them physically, because I think you have to phrase it in a sense that it's not disrespectful. And I try to do that without dissuading the public, in a sense. But, you know, coming from a horse's background, we all know the type of effort and the type of work that it takes to get a horse over to the races in the afternoon. So I always like to be cognizant of that fact as well. But to answer the question, no, I haven't. But there's still time.
That's right. That's right. Get out of here without talking about this weekend's races. I'll let Mike ask you about the big race, but I was curious, in terms of the undercard on Saturday, is there one horse in particular you're looking forward to seeing run?
You know, I was asked this question, and I thought the Appleton just in general was, I know, kind of a smaller field, but there's a lot going on in the Appleton. I'm really excited to see the Visadero come back in his second start off the layoff, because he was closing like a freight train last time out in the Canadian turf. And we saw, I just think that he's a very good miler, and even he does have a tremendous turn of foot, and even forced the pass. We haven't seen him since September. I went up to Palm Meadows on Monday, and I was speaking to the assistant for Alan Goldberg, and they said, you know, he was kind of tailing off in the latter half of the season, and they sent him to New Jersey at Colt Neck Farm, a farm that Alan Goldberg has, and they freshened him up, and I saw him in the Chevrolet. He looked really, really great, too. So I'm excited to see those two horses in that particular race. And from a betting perspective, I'm really interested in seeing Montclair on the undercard, actually in the Pan American. I thought this horse, who was trained by Christophe Clément, has a lot of upside in his last race. I know it was only against two other than Allowance Company, but he did it on his own talents alone, so I think he has a lot of upside. I'm excited to see that those handful of horses.
Great answers. Well, let's get to the big race, which many people are calling a match race with eight other horses. So I'll put you on the spot first. Mohamen or Nyquist?
Mohamen.
All right. No hesitation. I like that. And then the second question, if it is indeed just a race between those two, who do you like to complete the try?
Well, that's a great question, because beyond Nyquist, and I respect Nyquist so much, and he just seems like he's been really acclimating well day after day down here in South Florida. Beyond Nyquist and Mohamen, I think you have to respect Fellowship, given the state scenario in here. I'll probably use them in the trifecta because we have, you know, if you look at Take It to the Edge, who should be very quick on the front end. We have Chavanes, who will pressure it. Nyquist isn't going to be far off the pace either. There's a pretty interesting pace scenario that might develop. And Fellowship, I think he has the credentials to round up the try. But even I don't know how to feel about Take It to the Edge. I'm still teetering off of him because he was one of the more maiden, one of the more impressive maidens that we've seen so far at the meet. But again, he has to stretch out the two turns, and given the pace scenario, it can he take the pressure and kind of deliver from there. So you're kind of grasping at straws between the top two, but those would be the two that I would be paying attention to on Saturday.
Excellent. Well, Gabby, thanks so much for joining us today. I want to point out that it's Gabby Gaudette Day here at Daily Racing Form. You'll be a guest in a little bit of time, about noon today, I believe, with our friend and colleague Matt Bernier over on the Matt Bernier Show. And, of course, you'll be able to hear a lot more from Gabby watching the Gulfstream simulcast feed tomorrow. Gabby, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you, too, Gabby.
Well, that was fun. I'm gonna cut the Periscope feed now, Mike.
Okay.
So folks watching on Periscope who are interested in what this is, it's the DRF Players podcast. You can find it on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts, and we'll probably do a little bit more of this Periscope stuff, but feel free, those folks should feel free to join us whenever they want. It's kind of a fun little way to get some more people involved in the stuff we got going on here. But now the story, I meant to tell the story while Gabby was on air, but we ended up using our time differently. But I wanted to explain why Jonathan Kinchin is not here today. Have you heard this story?
Just a little bit, a little bit via the text messages that he was sending about probably not going to be on the show tomorrow.
Exactly. So basically the story is, you know, he's an action guy. He plays in just about every contest he can. It's the Horse Player World Series this weekend out at the Orleans. And so his coterie of friends, pretty much from the get-go, were making actual cash side bets on whether or not he'd show up, suspecting that he couldn't stay away. He swore he wasn't going to. But his partner, Tom Lute, after one day of action, is in the top 50 of the tournament. So there's something like, oh, gosh, 38th of 600 or 700. So that's actually really good in this three-day tournament. They've got a big leg up. So he was using that as his excuse to fly out there. But then, you know, I'm not 100% convinced he's going to make it, because I was speaking to him this morning, just going over a couple of aspects of the Gulfstream card on Saturday, and he was giving me the recap of yesterday at the Orleans, and he kept saying things like, oh yeah, we were worried about these bombs, or maybe today we'll find a bomb. And he's saying this while sitting at the desk at the airport in Phoenix waiting to make his connection to Las Vegas. And at some point I had to cut him off and say, Jonathan, you know, you talk about bombs a couple more times in the airport. The people who took the under on Kinchin making Vegas, they're going to cash big, dude. So we'll see. We'll see if he makes it out there or not. The hope is that he will. He and Lute, both sharp guys, they'll be drawing very live for all the marbles at the Horse Player World Series. And we'll make sure to give him we'll make sure for him to give a recap on that when he gets back on the show on Wednesday. So that'll be a lot of fun. Now, are we ready for our next guest? You have the control board in front of you there, Mike. Have we been joined?
Well, I think so. Although I'm not.
Hey, Chris, are you here?
There you
I
go.
Hope so. Can you hear me?
There he is. I should have logged on the computer. I'm in a little bit of an unusual tech situation here. I'm actually at my childhood home in Port Washington, Long Island, in my dad's old office, which is kind of fun. Looking at a picture right now of my dad and Brian Wilson sitting on the desk across the room. So I don't have my usual
good vibrations.
Good vibrations indeed. And the vibrations are always good when Chris Larmy is in the room. Chris, known to many as the head of the NTRA Players Committee, as a respected and feared contest player, had a lot of success last weekend with a big result on bcqualify.com, and we just thought this was the perfect time to bring you onto the show. So thanks for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, I'm always, you know, enjoy talking with you guys, so thanks for inviting me.
Excellent.
And Chris,
we'll get to the races in a minute.
Yeah, you may not remember, Pete, because I think it was a show that you were not on back last summer at Saratoga, but Chris was on with Scott Carson one time.
I remember it was the week of the contest, I think I was underwater, and those guys very ably pinch hit, which is nice. That's right. I should have mentioned in my little two-sentence bio, Chris, that you're also one of the editors of publichandicapper.com, where, in fact, you gave out a couple of the winners who you also played on BC Qualify last weekend.
That's right. I've been an editor for a long time. That's a great contest. You know, get involved with it. It's free. And, Scott and I go back quite a ways, and he invited me out to Saratoga, and we had a good time. We were sort of running on fumes when we did that show.
Saratoga will do that to a man.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I'll jump in with the first question. Obviously, you've been playing contests for a while and are well-known to many of the contest players. But lately, your son has been playing a little bit more and has become a bit of a force on the contest scene. Talk about what it's like to compete against your own kid.
It's really fun. I mean, when you watch them growing up, you always hope, you know, they end up growing up to be happy and successful, and you encourage them to try new things, and you're always teaching them stuff. And I was always a sports guy, and I coached Alex in sports, and I taught him how to play games, and you see them get better and better over time. And when they're young, you always sort of go easy on them and let them win, so it keeps them interested and engaged. But then as they get older and bigger and stronger and faster, all of a sudden you're playing one-on-one basketball and you're getting your butt kicked and you're trying as hard as you can and you can't beat them anymore. So I'm hoping I can see that same kind of growth in Alex's handicapping play. He's, still learning like we all are, but he has some good qualities that I think will make him successful. His biggest handicap right now is just he's so busy, and he just doesn't have the level of experience that a lot of players have. And he was busy fighting wars in Afghanistan, and he just recently came back and just got out of the Army. He's still in reserve, so he finally has a chance to play in some contests, but he's still really limited with time, and that's his biggest handicap right now.
Chris, while we have you here, we haven't really done much about the new NHC rules on the podcast yet, and I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but I do want to maybe get just a quick little overview of what you think are the most important changes for the NHC heading into 2017.
In terms of the actual NHC itself?
Correct. The switch, there were a few different rule changes between the NHC. Well, I mean, I guess most of the changes were on the tour, but there was a big change for the NHC itself. Maybe let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, on the NHC, the biggest change is sort of not a change in that they're going back to the Friday, Saturday, Sunday format versus Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So that sort of changes the mix of races you have on the different days. We got a lot of feedback, some positive, but it was more negative. And so that was, probably the biggest change is sort of a back to the future to the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday format. I'm trying to think of the other changes right now. I hadn't really didn't know I was going to get this question. Is there some other changes?
Sorry. The other stuff is about the tour, and that's a little more down the rabbit hole. Maybe we'll talk about that another time. We got a lot of ground to cover. I really, the big thing was the going back to Friday, basically what your opinion was of that. I mean, you respond, you do such a good job, and the Players Committee does such a good job responding to player feedback. People are always taking me aside and giving me their opinions about what should be different, and I always tell them, look, the Players Committee, Chris specifically, they really care about your opinion. I'm happy to listen to you, but if you give your feedback, it's likely to be heard. That said, are you personally in favor of this change back, or did you like it the other way?
No, I was really ambivalent. I wasn't sure personally or how others would react to it. I think if I had my choice, I sort of like having it the way it was with the best racing on the championship day. But I really understand people wanting to have a little better racing early on so they have their best chance to, you know, make the cut or make it to the final table. So I can see it both ways. I really was sort of ambivalent.
Yeah, I definitely take that point that with the way it was last year, 90% of the players aren't getting to play in the NHC finals on the best racing. So it's probably in the best interest of the tournament. Selfishly, I love being able to get out of there on Sunday morning, and I won't be able to do that next year, so I'm not that crazy about that. But I understand the needs of one semi-journalist don't outweigh the needs of 500 contest players.
Too bad all the players don't have that same attitude.
Exactly. You're obviously a big fan of the Breeders' Cup contest, a big fan of the NHC. I'd love if you could just take a minute before we dive into these races to compare and contrast these two major tournaments.
Well, I think the biggest difference is the Breeders' Cup, you know, the focal point is, you know, the racing and the horses, and you're at the live venue, you know, where the whole eyes of all the racing world are on that event. And it's just, you know, from just the pageantry and just the experience of being there, and you know, the Breeders' Cup is really special. And you're also getting to play in the contest and bet on the races. I don't want to downplay that, but there's that whole other side to it, you know, the racing side, where as the NHC, one of the things that's really cool about it is the focal point is really the horse players. I mean, this is the one weekend where the racing industry really focuses on the horse player, and that was sort of what Steve and Chris had in mind back when he first sort of envisioned this many years ago, and I think we're really seeing that come to fruition. It's just amazing the last few years. You go there, and you have the attention of so many people in the industry around the horse players and the personalities on the, you know, the player side, and, you know, to me, that's the big difference. They're both really cool, but one, it's really all about the horses, and the other one, it's really all about the horse player, and I think both of them are just, you know, really important parts of the industry, and it's really cool to celebrate both.
That's such a great point. I've never heard it put quite so eloquently. When I finally get around to writing that update for the winning contest player, that quote's probably going straight in the book because I don't think anybody could say it better than that. So thank you for that, Chris. All right, guys, are we ready to take a look at these races for Saturday, or you have anything else you want to get to first, Mike?
Well, I was just going to ask Chris if you had a preference personally, whether you like the live money contest like the BCBC or the $2 mythical format like the NHC, or if you just you're similarly ambivalent and can see the value of each.
Yeah, I'm not really trying to be politically correct. I really like them all. I mean, it's like, do I like pepperoni pizza or do I like meat lovers pizza? I love them both. I couldn't tell you which one's better. You know, do I like hot fudge sundae or a banana split? You know, I'll take either one. They're great. I like them all. Give me as much as I can eat. So.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, the first of the public handicapper races on Saturday is race 8 from Gulfstream. It's the Appleton. It's for 3-year-olds and up. It's a mile on the turf. Chris, as our guest, we're going to let you go first. Really interesting handicapping puzzle here. How are you going to solve it?
Well, I think, yeah, I agree. It is a really interesting race. And I think, to me, Bill Mott looks like he is just locked and loaded for a big day on this card. Up and down the card, I think he has live runners in every race. And Long on Value, I think, kind of right in the vanguard for that bunch. To me, you know, he really needed his last race. He was kind of down on the inside if you watched the race. He never really was comfortable. He wasn't really ranked, but you could tell he didn't like being trapped in behind a slow pace all the way around. He never really got a chance to run till the end. And if you watch, I even heard Gabby earlier on talking about how Divisadero was just flying down the stretch, which he was. But if you watch, when Long on Valley finally started to hit his stride really late, he gallops out well ahead of Divisadero, even though Divisadero was, you know, flying late. And Longham Valley is a classy horse, and I think he's sitting on a big race. And because of the Visadero and Force to Pass and all included, he might even get overlooked a little bit, even though it is Bill Mott. So, you know, I'm 3-1 the morning line, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him go off at 4 or 5-1. And I think he's really, really going to run a big race. So to me, from a most likely winner standpoint, I think that's the most likely winner. Now, if I needed a price in a contest, I would probably go with Sky Captain, who I think is another one that looks like he's sitting on a good race, and he fits with these, and Cassie, and Leperot, who doesn't always give me the best of rides, seems to be riding better right now than he has in quite a while, so I don't think that'll be a disadvantage for him. So to me, he's sort of the longer value play. But I think the long on value play is probably long on value.
Well, let me ask you this. For a contest like Public Handicapper, which of those two will you put in your top slot?
You know, it's a good question. A lot of times, what's cool about Public Handicapper is you can go out and sort of see what the contest odds are.
Yes.
It's not the true odds, but it shows you the people in the contest, you know, who they're playing, which is who you're competing against. So it really kind of tells you what the value is from a contest perspective for the horses. And so let me go out and look. Right now, this is pretty shocking, actually. Both Long on Value and Sky Captain are 5-1.
Interesting. Within that, it's so early, though, that could obviously.
It is early.
Yeah,
change. So I'll probably take a look at that, but if they're pretty close, I'd go with Long on Value.
Gotcha.
If Sky Captain 2 or 3 times the odds, I'd go with him in the contest.
Mike, on paper, the morning line favorite here is number 6, Divisadero. Is that how you see the betting going?
Oh, boy, it's tough, isn't it? Perhaps, because I think he's a horse that a lot of people were really, you know, for a lot of good reasons, were really, really high on last year, had a long layoff, came back off that layoff, ran quite well, as Chris mentioned, was only a neck behind Long on Value for place money against Heart to Heart, who essentially just ran everybody off their feet. You know, the case for Divisadero is he's likely to move forward in that second start. Buff Bradley doesn't usually run them big off of long layoffs. You know, he ran well in his first start as a 4-year-old. He certainly ran well as a 3-year-old. He's the best horse Bradley's had since Groupie Doll. So I think he's going to get a lot of attention. I wouldn't want to rely on him at a short price, and I think the 5-2 is probably fair, but I do have concerns about whether you're even going to get that. So I actually like the horse that Gabby was talking about, Force the Pass, who's a horse as similar to Divisadero in a sense, but is maybe a start behind. He's making his first start off of a long layoff, first start as a 4-year-old, ran very well as a 3-year-old, was never out of the money, won a grade one, beat Divisadero back in the Belmont Derby, really has never run a bad race. And that last couple starts, it looks like he maybe didn't run that well, but he had trouble in both, even as the favorite. Last out at Laurel, he was 4 wide both turns. The rails were out. He was trying to run down a long shot leader who wired the field. I think he's one that's just going to get a little overlooked because you've got some of these horses like Long on Value, Divisadero, and even All Included with Javier Castellano aboard. He's likely to take money. So I think it's a wide open race, and I could make a case for any of them winning, but I my pick's going to be Force the Pass.
I've got a couple of notes to share. Oh, Chris, what were you going to say?
I just say just 2 points that Mike made, I think, are really good. One is Divisadero Bradley is a lot better second off layoff, and for Force the Pass, Goldberg's actually good off the bench. So
that's
sort of a positive for both of those. They're kind of both sitting at the right spot going into the race, I think.
Right.
I had a couple of notes to share on horses that we haven't even talked about, and one Mike touched on, All Included. I had a note from way back in one of his starts where I noticed him on the tape looking around in the stretch that I thought he would improve with blinkers. Interestingly, since I made that note, he'd actually worked with blinkers, and Pletcher only now is deciding to put them on. So I don't know if that's – I feel like I almost have to use in some respect because I had that note from way back, but the fact that it took him so long to get there, even though he'd worked them in the equipment, makes me wonder if he's not just, you know, trying something. But I do think he could get a trip from the inside, and if he's longer than his 5-to-1 morning line, would become a definite definitely a stronger use. The other horse I had a note on was Reporting Star. I had a very positive note from the Sunshine Millions turf, simply that he was the only one of the speeds in there who was anywhere near at the end, and it also ran, according to track, is 40 feet farther than the winner. So based on those two positive notes, Reporting Star is one that I will also think about including in my wagers in the Appleton. So let's move on from there to the 10th race, the Sir Shackleton. This one is 3-year-olds and up, going 7 furlongs on the dirt. Mike, let's start with you.
Wait, are we doing the Sir Shackleton, or is it?
Yeah, it's the PH race.
Oh, did I get the race wrong?
I think we're doing the Orchid. I can give you a pick in the Sir Shackleton if you'd like, but I think we're doing the Orchid.
Did you look at it too, Chris?
Yeah, I looked at it.
All right, let's go over it quickly, and then we'll move on to the Orchid. Sorry about
that. Well, that's okay. This is one that we talked about yesterday in the webinar for anybody that was watching. But your favorite on here, I believe, is Defer Heaven, right, at 5-2? And is the Jorge Navarro trained, but for whatever reason, Jaramillo decides to take Brothers of the Time, and I had that amazing stat, 13 for 22 and 19 for 22 in the money and dirt sprints with Navarro with Jaramillo aboard. So that was notable to me that he would choose this one. He's also getting a positive weight swing from the last time they faced each other when Defer Heaven won. You're going to get a much better price, and he's the one I'd look to play. The other one I don't have a whole lot of faith in is Grande Shores on the cutback. He's the class horse, but I think he's just going to be a little overbet off of that class drop, and I think he might be a little too far out of it early. So that's my thought on the Sir Shackleton.
Where did you land here, Chris?
Well, I think this one, to me, looks like it'll have a smoking hot early pace, because Navarro sends everything, and Defer Heaven, Anchor Down, WV Jet Setter, they're all speedy, and it's a 7-furlong race, so I would think that's to their disadvantage, although I want to watch the track, because sometimes they juice it up on big days, but if it's a normal track, I think that might be why the one horse Brothers of the Time, the rider switch, he might be getting a really good trip behind that speed. So I think that's a neat angle to look at, especially with that formulator stat. But the horses I was looking at really on this one were the two outside horses, Griff and Just Call Kenny. They're both really long shots. I think they drew well. They can just stalk from the outside, and if they go fast early, both of these horses, especially like Griff, you know, he ran a pretty good race last time out off a long layoff, and he's worked well since that race. He's had some really good workouts. So you got to think he's going to run a big race in here, and he's 15-1 in the morning line. So if he could get that would be really good. And Just Call Kenny, kind of, he showed talent at one time. He's never really run back to it. But he, again, has some really good recent work, and he seemed like he woke up a little bit in his last race, and he cuts back for this. So he's interesting. I think I like Griff a little better, but both of those are live bombs in the race, I think.
It seems like a smart way to read it. I was going to look at one that Mike was not too interested in Grand Shores, who I just thought the race could set up for, because I see the pace similarly to the way that Chris does. I just think that might be a case of you have the best closer in a race who might set up for one. But I'm with Mike. If the 4-to-1 isn't a reality and you're looking at 2-to-1, it would probably become a pass race for me. Let's move it along. That was our little bonus coverage there. Let's move along to the Orchid, where we have fillies and mares on the turf going a mile and 3/8 in this grade three stakes. Chris, where are you regarding the Orchid winner?
Well, this one, you know, I definitely have to say that Protocol is a strong favorite. I don't have really any knocks. The horse had its prep. It should run well. It's Castellano. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see the horse win. I don't think you'll get any kind of a price. To me, the value looks like Quiet Kitten, who's an improving four-year-old, I think has upside, to get a nice tracking trip. You know, just really nothing, no reason not to like that horse. So if you get 8-1, I think that's an interesting horse. And the other one, I think, and I've already talked about how I thought Mott was really locked and loaded for horses to run big. And Song of Ice and Fire and others had, you know, one prep and should be able to run a big race in here. It's one that needs to improve, but it has potential to improve. And I think Mott had a lot of his horses at pacing in that quarantine with the herpes thing. And, you know, I think that's why he's got so many live horses. They probably couldn't run him for a while, but he sure really looked stacked on the card throughout the day.
That's an interesting one, Song of Ice and Fire, not just for Game of Thrones fans. Mike, where did you end up in here?
Well, you know, Chris stole my thunder a little bit because I agree 100% that Photocall is the most likely winner, but she's probably going to be a pretty short price and maybe even lower than that 2-1 of the morning line. And I really like Quiet Kitten, and I'll go even one step further and say I think she'll probably, well, not even probably, I think she will be on the lead early, and I think she's going to try and wire the field and try and run them off their heels and play come and get me. And maybe, as Chris mentioned, an improving four-year-old filly by Kitten's Joy, maybe she's good enough to hold everybody off late at a nice price.
Yeah, I wish I had something clever in here. I'm having trouble seeing beyond Photocall, but I appreciate your guys' insight, and I'm going to spend a little bit more time in this race, see if I can come up with something more clever in time to put in for my picks on publichandicapper.com. So let me make sure I have this right. The next race we're talking about is the 13th at Gulfstream?
I think so.
Excellent, excellent. It's the Pan American. It's three-year-olds and up. It's a mile and a half on the turf on this loaded Gulfstream card on Saturday.
What a card.
Michael, what's that?
Yeah.
I said, what a card.
It's pretty awesome.
Gulfstream, yeah.
Mike, we'll keep it with you for your thoughts on the Pan American.
Well, I'll say this. So Kaigan 3-1 on the morning line for a horse who runs well in these spots but hasn't won since 2014, that's just too short for me. The horse, and similarly, I think Grand Tito is going to be even lower than the 4-1 morning line. It's notable, and we talked about this yesterday on the webinar, Pete. It's notable that he gets a jockey switch off that win from Jaramillo to Javier Castellano, which is going to make a lot of people take notice. I think that 4-1 comes down maybe to 5-2. So I'm looking to play another four-year-old, somewhat likely improve, and that's number 2, Jay Gatsby. Ran a really good race last out, lost to World Approval, who came back and somewhat flattered the effort by running second last week. And that was the race the fairgrounds where he lost to Take the Stand. 97 Buyer for the second place finish. Nothing wrong with that. I think if Jay Gatsby moves forward or runs a similar effort in here, he's going to be a big player, and it should be a nice price.
I have a point here, a contest type horse, I think. I want your guys' honest opinion about number 3, basically just coming off the trip last time, which was awfully difficult, and you have not all that far behind, and we've got 20-1 on the morning line.
Good trip with him. He can definitely get the distance, and his best effort is probably as good or better than anything in here. So to me, at 20-1 on the morning line, he's clearly the one I would go with.
When you're talking about his best effort, are you basing that on speed figure or something you saw visually or
no,
four-length main sequence? Or where are you coming up with that?
No, it's more based on his past speed figures in the past races he's run in previous races. These are like, for him, I'm talking about back when he was a four-year-old, when he was kind of at his peak form in the summer. He ran a big race at Arlington and Kentucky Downs. Those races were good enough to win this, and he kind of had a lost five-year-old year where he just didn't do much at all. But now his last race was, he kind of woke up. By far his best race since his four-year-old year. And I'm always looking on these older horses for, you know, that signal that, you know, if they've got that back class, you know, is this the day they might run back to those old efforts? And to me, that last race said, yeah, that's the best he's run in a while. And it was against pretty good horses, Stakes Company. And so if he could run back to what he was doing in his four-year-old campaign, he's very live in here. So, and that's why you're getting a big price. But, you know, if you're looking for big prices, yeah, those are the kind of things you have to look for. They're always speculative because sure. He hasn't really won a race in a couple of years, right? But this might be the day.
Now, Kai Gunn, from a buyer speed figure perspective, other than Gran Tito's, Gran Tito actually has a couple of figures that would fit right there with Kai Gunn, but those two, from a buyer speed figure point of view, really, really stand out. And with Kai Gunn having two triple-digit figures in the last three, is it possible, Chris, you think we're underrating him a little bit here?
I think he's definitely one of the main contenders. I kind of like what Mike said, is he doesn't win a lot of races, and he's going to be the favorite. Probably he and Gran Tito will buy for favoritism. Both of those horses certainly could win, but they'll just be underlays, I think. It's just the way I'm looking at it.
Another horse I think we should definitely touch on while we're talking about this race is number 7, Wake Forest, for Chad Brown, who I'm guessing might even end up being shorter than the 5-2 of the morning line for two reasons. One, the Chad Brown factor. His horses, as we know, they tend to take money because he's such a good trainer. And also this horse, according to the DRF Flockers, has been training very well at Palm Meadows. Mike, what are your thoughts on Wake Forest? Is this horse an A for you if you're playing this race in multis?
I guess he'd probably have to be. I mean, the concern that I would have is the price. Looking at his back form and his class in Europe, you know, he certainly would fit with these. I'm guessing that the reason why he's in North America now is he wants probably firmer turf than he's been seeing over in Europe, and maybe that's why you can excuse that sixth place finish at Arlington. But he's just one that, you know, kind of similar to Kai Gunn and even Gran Tito for that matter, I feel like might be a little bit over bet based on how likely I think he is as a winner. But yeah, he's certainly one of the ones.
One sneaky horse I'd love to include is a horse we've talked about on the podcast before and who Gabby mentioned as one of the horses she's looking forward to betting today, and that's number 10, Montclair. Chris, have you looked at this horse? Is this a horse you'd think about including as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be guilty of naming the entire field, but yeah, I think that horse certainly wouldn't shock me. It has to work a trip, but it fits with ease. And, you know, another horse, I thought this was like one of Mike's pet horses, but I might have it mixed up with another one. I thought he always liked St. Albans Boy for some reason.
Oh, yeah, yeah. St. Albans Boy is one of the big stars of the pot.
Yeah.
We can't let a show that reached that St. Albans Boy is in go by without talking about him. I reached the point of giving up on him maybe two races back. Mike, are you finally on the give up on our plotty friend St. Albans Boy, or are you at least including him in third in your trifecta here?
You know, I don't know. I like him. He's one of those horses that you know, generally runs his race, but often, especially in graded stakes, it's just not quite good enough. So I would see him potentially trying to get a piece and maybe, you know, clunking up for third or fourth. But I would be surprised if he wins against this field, which is pretty wide open in my book.
Yeah.
So,
Here's a general handicapping question that I want to ask both of you, because it's something that I've noticed sometimes in these longer races. You know, for USA racing, a mile and a half counts as a marathon. And for me, sort of the general rule would be that the longer the distance goes, it's not that I don't use speed figures in my handicapping, but the more willing I often am able to be, or the more I'm willing to be creative in terms of the other handicapping factors I use to land on a selection. Mike, is that your approach as well, or what other factors go into handicapping for you when you're looking at a marathon race like this one, as opposed to, say, this race being a mile?
Yeah, I would agree, and especially on turf.
Specified I was speaking specifically about turf, though. Yeah. I guess you could make the point for dirt too, but I was thinking in my head about turf.
Because, you know, a lot of times it comes down to the way the race is run, and, you know, I think for me, class and form really have much more weight, or carry much more weight in these longer turf races, especially these longer turf graded stakes races, than strict speed figures would, because so much of the speed figures come down to how the race was run. And so you know, I use them as a little bit of a guide, but I'm certainly not beholden to the numbers.
How about you, Chris? What factors do you look at when you're handicapping marathon turf races?
Well, probably the two things I emphasize more than I would in other racing. One is the breeding. You know, the classic European breeding, I like to see those horses, you know, that bred to run all day, especially that have run in Europe, just because they still point towards those longer races. You hinted at that with your comment. But, you know, a mile and a half isn't even a long race probably in Europe. Their long races are 2 miles or a mile and three quarters. So I like that. Plus the trainers. I mean,
yeah,
there's a handful of trainers where, you know, they train these horses every day. They know how to get them ready for these sorts of races, where 80% of the trainers in the U.S. probably just, you know, it's not in their wheelhouse. So those are probably the two things I look at.
I agree completely. I'm always going to give extra credit to Chad Brown, to Christophe Clement, to Bill Mott, to Jonathan Shepard when it comes to races like this. You guys up for doing a little more bonus coverage? Should we go ahead and talk about the big one, the Florida Derby, race 14 tomorrow at Gulfstream Park?
Yeah, I can talk all day about horse racing.
And that's why you're such a good guest on the show, Chris. Well, we'll let you start this one off. We talked about it a little bit with Gabby at the top of the show. This is a mile and an eighth at Gulfstream Park, the big one, and it's an unusually interesting clash this year with the leading contender from the East and the leading contender from the West. Before we begin, can you recall, Chris, in your days being a racing fan, of the last time we sort of had the top two contenders on everybody's Derby watch list face off before the first Saturday in May?
No, not really, because it used to be traveling East to West wasn't so easy to do as it is today. So you kind of had the West Coast horses stayed on the West Coast and the East Coast horses stayed on the East. So I really can't think of any. You know, usually waited till the Derby to get together and clash. So I can't think of it, not in any time in the recent past.
Is this a race, Chris, that you're just going to watch, or do you figure you might make a bet in here?
I might make a bet. I mean, one thing I thought was kind of amusing, people are upset that other horses entered the race. It's $1 million.
Well, Chris wrote an interesting piece about that this week. Yeah, just compared some of these entrants to Rick's Natural Star in the Breeders' Cup years ago, which made me chuckle to remember that debacle. And I certainly hope that doesn't end up being we don't end up having anything, untoward happen here. But, yeah, it is sort of shocking. This race, on paper, you would have thought would have had a 5 or 6 horse field written all over it, but I guess folks want to run for the 100,000 for third. I guess that's what's going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, because of the big two, all the other top horses scattered, right?
Right.
So you figure you really could hit the board without having to beat much in a grade one race and win purse money and maybe even get points for the Derby. So I'm not that surprised. I am a little surprised. There are a couple of, you know, I would say no-hope horses in here, but I'm not that surprised that there's other horses entered in the race, and I don't blame them for taking a shot. I, a couple of these horses, it does seem a little ridiculous. But, you know, I can sort of see if I had a decent horse and I was stable in Florida, why not give it a shot, you know?
Well, would you, in terms of your bet, would you be looking to get Clever with one of the big two in an exacta? Would you would you look at one of these outsiders and say, you know what, if everything goes right, if Nyquist and Mohammed have a mutual toe stub, one of these long shots could get it done. How are you going to bet this race?
Yeah, definitely. I have a plan. I mean, I have two opinions in this race. One is between Nyquist and Mohammed, I much prefer Mohammed. To me, Nyquist, I've never been on his bandwagon. Just nothing about him looks like a Derby winner. He could win this race, but he's a nice horse. He can't. I mean, he deserved to be two-year-old champion. But Mohammed, you know, everything about him, he looks like a Derby horse. I mean, just, you know, to me, those two, you know, I definitely prefer one over the other. But I do think there's a third horse in this race who's really interesting, and that's Take It to the Edge. I mean, I'm always looking for horses with upside. This horse, you know, really was impressive in his first race. You can say, well, he didn't beat much, and, you know, he had things his own way, yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, he did. He was in the race. He ran against who was in the race, and he was really impressive. And from a speed figure standpoint, that race wasn't that much slower than what Nyquist has been running his whole career. So, and you got to believe that's not the best he can run. And I don't see a lot of pace in this race. And I think, you know, they'll be aggressive and they'll just put him on the lead. And I don't think Nyquist is going to be in a big hurry to press the early pace. He's going to try to be as patient, and he'll get a confident ride. And, you know, maybe when they turn for home, Take It to the Edge is another really talented horse, and he might take him all the way to the wire. So to me, he's the obvious third horse in here. I'm not exactly sure how I'll play it, but I might try to play him, you know, even to win and hook him up with Mohammed, or maybe even play the tri, although I think a trifecta of those two, and it's probably a waste of money. But I think he's the interesting horse. I mean, Dale Romans isn't a guy that gets horses to freak first time starting, and this horse really did, so he could be something special. So that's the interesting horse in the race, I think.
Mike, where is your opinion in the Florida Derby?
Well, Chris, we finally found a race where we kind of diverge on opinion, which is nice, because often I find that I end up agreeing so much with you. Me, you know, I was like you for a long time and was one that just questioned Nyquist, questioned whether he could get the distance, questioned the quality of fields that he was beating. You know, I mean, four races in a row, he beat Swipe, you know, and I don't know if Swipe would be one of the top contenders in this race, you know, despite what he's done as a two-year-old. However, I'm kind of coming around to Nyquist, partly because of that last effort in the San Vicente. He's a horse that I think can be on or near the lead if they give it to him. If it's slow pace, he can take it. He showed me in the Breeders' Cup that he can rally from off the pace and deal with a little bit of trouble. He's just a versatile horse that I had underestimated for a long time, and I think I'm perhaps done with that. That said, you know, Mohammed's probably the best horse he's faced. So, will strangely enough, even though you've got a two-year-old champion, he's likely to get a class test in this race. I think based on the odds, Nyquist will be a better price, and he's the one I would probably look to use on top. And I also kind of agree with you, but also maybe disagree with you a little bit on Take It to the Edge. I think he's the most interesting one outside of the top two, but I'm just concerned about this being the time. I think he's the one you'd want to own of the rest of this field, unquestionably. But I don't know if we're going to see it in the second start of his career, in the first time going two turns, in the first time at this class level. So I'd be looking more to use a horse like Fellowship, who's already been handled a couple times by Mohammed, but has run consistently well, especially in longer efforts. I'd probably look to use him underneath and maybe hope one of the top two ends up out of the try.
for me, it's Team Nyquist, the angle being just an old school figure pattern angle that I think I first read about in Dave Litvin's book many years ago. I upgrade that Breeders' Cup Juvenile figure based on all the ground that he lost on both turns. I sort of see the comeback race for Nyquist as almost pairing up what he did in that race, which I think sets him up for a forward move. I understand the concerns. I'm hoping that the whole world goes nuts for Mohamed. I mean, they're the only two I'd use in multis, and I think I'd press Nyquist just a little bit. But guys, we are running out of time here on today's show. Any quick thoughts before I send us home?
Well, we should cover the fourth public handicapper race, or at least just say who we like to win in the Spiral at Turfway Park.
Oh, you know what? I forgot entirely about the Spiral. Boy, my hosting today was off point. It's easy. I'll go first. It's all about Cassiopeia. We talked about that trip after the race at Golden Gate. It was a huge effort. I watched that race back, and, you know, Cassiopeia's been in my horse watch list since that day. And you guys are going to have to do a lot to talk me out of beating. And I think there's going to be a much better than I would have expected price on the bet back of Cassiopeia because of the presence of Air Force. But guys, give your one sentence on the Spiral.
Chris, good, you go first.
I'm anti-Air Force because, you know, his debacle's last race. His good races have been like on yielding tracks or sloppy tracks. He's to me a big question mark. He'll get way over bet. The horses I'm interested in here are Surgical Strike because he ran a really big race at Turfway Park, which I think is something that's notable, and he'll probably get overlooked because he ran at Turfway Park. And yep. The other horse I really like is Don't Be So Salty. He looks really solid. He's run well on Polytrack before at Woodbine. And, you know, he should get a good tracking trip either on or near the lead. And so those are the two I like, and they're both priced.
So Chris, we almost agree again. I agree Air Force is a vulnerable favorite at a short price. And I think that Surgical Strike is an interesting long shot, especially if he gets a pace to run at. And I like that he's won at the track. But for me, the most likely winner is Azar, who I think is going to sit a good trip and stock the early speed and then try and hold off the closers late. He's, I don't know who I'll use in public handicapper, but he's the one that I would lean on most heavily in, if I was playing the race in a multi-race wager.
Could be a reasonable public handicapper horse. I mean, I think Air Force is going to be way lower than that 3-1. Just looking at figures and knowing that he's a big name and a horse that nearly won a Breeders' Cup race, he's going to be really, really hammered. And I don't really dislike him all that much, but I can just guarantee he's going to be pummeled at the windows, which is why I think it makes sense for us to go in different directions. But I don't think, I mean, what's the shortest you think Azar could be?
Well, it's Todd Pletcher, so, boy, I don't know, 7-2? You know, maybe he becomes
that short.
He becomes the clear second choice behind Air Force. I don't really see another clear second choice in here.
But Cassiopeia off the trip has a chance of it.
Maybe. That was just such a, sorry, but not the strongest field in the world, and certainly not flattered by frank conversation over in Dubai. I just think Azar, having won and run well on different surfaces, people can see Pletcher and should take to the synthetic. I just fear he's going to be the one that takes the money after Aero Force.
It's not unreasonable, man. Interesting to see Franco riding for Pletcher. Will be interesting if that relationship continues to develop. Franco certainly been showing his talent and looking like a rider who has the capability to step up and become a real go-to, and getting into the Pletcher barn, that's sure not going to hurt that case at all.
Yeah. Well, and didn't he win the Withers last year? Was he on Far From Over?
I would have to look that up. My memory is not that good, Mike. I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, and it's only noon.
Okay.
And just another note on Cassiopeia. I think he won at Woodbine on the Polytrack, too, last year. So that's a plus for that horse, too.
Yeah, we'll be very, very interested to see how they bet this one. That's for sure. All right, well, we've gone a little bit long, and that's my fault for my C-minus hosting today. But I still think it was a great show because of the strength of our guests, Chris Larmy and Gabby Gaudet. So hopefully folks enjoyed it. Hopefully you enjoyed the Periscope experiment. I think that's something we should continue to do, Mike, encourage a new group of people to start watching the show. Instead of your handsome face, or better yet, showing Gabby, people had to look at my ugly mug for 15 minutes, but they'll get over it. And all right, I think we had about enough of this. Thanks so much to Gabby Gaudet. Thanks to Chris Larmy. Thanks to Mike Hogan. Thanks to all of you. May you win all your 10-horse match race photos.